Wow. Merry Christmas to everyone. It's happy anniversary for Inner Garden Online Chapel as well, because 5 years ago on December the 3rd, we came online, and that's when our little chapel started. And Derek White Sky Cloud, hi there.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. And you talked me in to coming on BBS Radio online with our chapel.
Yeah, I did.
And boy, that was the start of everything, wasn't it?
Boy, did I mess it up for us. No.
No, I think we've had a pretty good time. We've really grown in that 5 years. It's been absolutely fantastic. I'd like to thank Dawn and Doug and Zeth in the later years here for helping us with the programs that we've done through BBS Radio. But we certainly have grown. And we were going to have another guest on. Derek, do you want to talk a bit about OAM?
Yeah, we were going to bring back Kenny Kingston, who actually had predicted over three years ago when Barb called in, actually was doing my show called Between Two Worlds Radio on BBS Radio. And I had Kenny Kingston on. He's actually called the Psychic to the Stars. And he actually read for famous people like the President Harry Truman, Marilyn Monroe, John Kennedy, many, many people, John Wayne and all them. And he read for them. And I asked him to come on that time. And throughout the night, he was giving readings. And later on, you called in just to give us support, to say hello. And he wouldn't let you hang up. He wanted to give you a message. And when he told you that the church will become bigger,
That we don't grow it.
You outgrow it, yeah. And you thought to yourself, "Oh my God, you know, I've already got the church is bigger."
and where we were, we could accommodate 140 people. Yeah. And I'm thinking in my head, "Oh my goodness, what kind of a congregation are we going to have?" But we, of course, even though we're working in this all the time, we're like everybody else, and we don't always connect all the way when somebody else gives a message. And what actually happened is we outgrew the use of the building we were in because we rented by the hour. And what happened was that when we wanted to have functions, we always had to have by the hour. After church, here you'd be climbing up the ladder, and Ozzy climbing up the ladder, taking down all the beautiful decorations that we put up to make it look like a chapel. And the people were trying to give them a cup of coffee and a cookie and kick them out the door because there's another group coming in behind us.
Yes.
So now Kenny says in 2 years we're going to make a move because we're going to outgrow this chapel.
Now, that was February 2nd, 2008.
No, sorry, 19th. Was, no,
February
19th,
February 19th, 2008, yeah.
Now, two years to the day of when he was on that radio program, we signed a contract and received the keys for our first really permanent base, which is a beautiful unit that we have. And it gives us an opportunity to have something going on pretty near every day of the week.
Now, I want to let the folks know out there, too, as well, that Barb forgot that Kenny made this prediction. She remembered, but didn't know the date. And so when Barb said she got this place, and she told me after, and I said, So I got home, and I checked my file, my archive, and I still have this archive on Kenny with Kenny Kingston, and I looked at it and went, "Oh my God!" It actually was February 19th, 2008, is when we did the interview, which basically you signed it, the church,
exactly 2 years later,
2 years to the day, February 19th, and so, I thought, okay,
absolutely awesome, and the thing was too that it, when it did come available, we'd attempted to get something the year before, and nothing was coming together. But when this happened, the salesman said, "Oh," when we called on one particular property, and he said to me, "I don't think that's going to work for you, Barb, but I've got one I think will." And we walked over, and I said, "Oh my goodness, this is perfect." And we wrote the offer, had it accepted, and the keys in our hand on the 19th. And the 1st of February, we didn't even know that we were going to have this place, or we hadn't even seen it yet. So we had only seen it, I think, on the 15th. And we had everything signed in our hand on the 19th and walked in the door and started the chapel on the land base of one that we basically manifested, if we want to say that, that was manifested. And really, everything was manifested because we only had about $1,500 left in the bank when we took the rental. And we thought, oh my goodness, how are we going to do all these upgrades that we need to do? Yeah. And it just miraculously all came together, remember?
Oh, yeah. Here's one for you, Barb. You remember, now, we're not going to go to the church that we got now, but do you remember when Kenny said this and you thought to yourself, remember you said there was a church for sale just down the road from the original hall. So you thought that that was the place.
And when we got maybe, I don't know how that's going to manifest. Yeah. But we looked at it, and of course, we're taken back when we're looking at millions of dollars. So we thought, well, that's not going to possibly be. Because really, I was still thinking outgrowing the church, meaning volume. And so we're looking at like 300 spaces in the church. That would cost us $1 million+.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't going to happen for us that way. But isn't this miraculous? Because look at it now, Derek. We're coming up to our 2-year anniversary in there, and which will be February, this coming February on the 12th. And I am telling you, we have now taken the upstairs.
Yeah. The congregation's gotten bigger from not just being on the level floor. Now they asked you if you want to take the upstairs area. You've taken the upstairs area. And this is actually, if you think about it, it's actually bigger than the hall if you break it down to size.
Yeah. Well, we won't, for the chapel itself, the services, we won't basically use both, but we'll be able to use it for large functions or like when we have a mini fair, mini teas or things like that, you know, the mini readings. And when we have people like the Reeses who are going to come in April, if we want it more comfortable than it is crowded with 50 people, we can get 70 and they're not being crowded upstairs. Yeah.
Yes.
And unless there's somebody who's handicapped and can't take the stairs, otherwise it is just absolutely wonderful. And to boot with that, two other people who are very much connected, the other reverend that's with me, and you're one of our elders, but Reverend Patricia Connor and her business partner, Joy Ross, have a program called Kindness is Key. So they're going to offset our costs by joining us in using that space.
Yeah.
So now, isn't this wonderful?
It is. And, you know, one thing I want to say, folks, the reason why we're also doing this show tonight, besides the anniversary, we did invite Kenny Kingston to be part of the program, to welcome him back again and to share his story with us and as actually talk about his new book called The Moment. And but at the moment, he was supposed to come on tonight with us, but a few days ago he was took ill and he ended up in the hospital. And so we want to give a shout out to Kenny and his family to wish him well, and our prayers are with him for that he gets speedy recovery.
And definitely send him healing angels.
Healing angels big time.
Yeah, and, for sure. We'll put him in our healing bowl. That's the most magnificent energy that comes through that healing bowl, because all the healing facilitators pray over that every day.
I don't know how you'd be able to fit Kenny in that little bowl.
You don't think he'll fit in the bowl?
I don't think he'll fit in the bowl.
Let's not get him stuck in the bowl. No, just his little thought of his energy goes in there.
Yeah.
And that's good. But isn't it wonderful, though, Derek, because look at how things have grown from just a small little seed when you and Dawn were talking, you know, 5 years ago. And you, it'll be 5 years and a month or so ago, and you were talking about maybe bringing an online chapel. And, you know, I didn't really, I wasn't really attached to a church at the time. I was, attending a church, but I wasn't really attached as a minister. And so we thought, well, we would try it. And we started in a little restaurant mm-hmm. when we finally decided that we were going to get a land base. And we had the little restaurant. Remember that? We have that little private room, and we would have the speakers come in who were just uplifting and vibrant. And everybody would come in at 8:30 and have coffee and a muffin. We'd do this nice little service, and then away everybody would go to their own church. And I'd go online with BBS radio, and we would talk about the speaker. I let the speaker do the little talk on there, and then we would take calls for messages mm-hmm. if people wanted some messages from their spirit workers or from a departed loved one or whatever. So it was really interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun to do. But Kenny, actually, another reason why we were asking Kenny to come on was he was promoting his brand new book called The Moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he mailed it to me, just got it on Friday, this last Friday, and I decided to read the first part of it. And it was quite interesting because the way he used the word the moment, it represents how we live at the moment. And, he's got a short story. He talked about this one. And the funny thing, we're talking about the church mm-hmm. and how we were looking for what we wanted. And Kenny also had his moment because he apparently was looking at four or five different houses in California that he wanted to purchase. He wanted to buy each one. Like he figured, well, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one. But for some reason, it just never worked. And so finally, he just got up. He just left it alone. He was forced to get himself an apartment, apparently, and he lived there for about 5 or 6 years. And until he decided to find this place, and when he did find this place, it did not even have a for sale sign on there. But yet, he had this feeling that this place should be for sale. So he apparently had a friend of his do the phone call to find out if this house is for sale. And that very same day, they called him back and said, yes, the house is for sale, but it was never on the market. It was never like on.
So it hadn't been advertised yet.
It hasn't been advertised yet. So it was for sale. So this is the house that Kenny was attracted to. So he took this house. Now that was Coleridge called The Moment. But here is the most interesting part. He said, how come I never got these other places? But what happened was later on through about a year or so after he got this place, there was actually a tornado that took place in California. And apparently it came through and it did a lot of major damage in a lot of other places that he remembers that he's looking at. So he decided to, after this tornado was all done and a little while after, he decided to take some trips around some of the houses where he was looking at and that he wanted to purchase at a time when they were for sale. And then he said when he went there, those same houses that he was looking at to purchase were all damaged by the tornado.
Wow.
So he had his moments, basically. Spirit told him, you would not be safe here if you bought this place. So everything that they prevented him from getting was basically keeping him from coming to harm. But the house that he lives in now never got touched by any tornado.
Oh, isn't that something, eh?
Yeah. So that's what he called the moment. There's, people always keep on asking why they don't get a place at a specific time, or why I don't get this house, or why I don't get this, or how come I don't get that? And they keep on saying, in time you're going to get what you need. But everybody keeps on saying, I'm in a hurry, I can't wait, I got it now, I want it now, I want it now. Then in the end, whether you're in demand of it, or if you're in like you want, you can't, if you're not willing to be willing to listen to anyone's advice and just go ahead and do it, then you regret it after. And the spirit tells you that you have to wait when it's the right time.
That's true. Because just like I was saying, we looked at a number of places. As a matter of fact, the Reeses, which are from Wales, and they came over, and at that time, it was a year before we did get the location. Yeah. And we went and looked at another one. I took them to the outside and I said, well, what do you feel? And they said, well, I think it would work, but I don't think this is the right one. And and they also said, I think you will probably be early next year, which was in August they were there, and it was basically the next year, early in the year, February, that we actually took it. And we opened up on, if you remember, got all the work done, and we opened up on Easter Sunday. which was the 4th of April that year.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really, really wonderful. And, you know, we just cannot believe the good fortune that's happened. What I am really pleased with, though, Derek, is all the work that BBS Radio and the people that are working there and all the work that the people that are light workers, if you want to say that, that are carrying God's light out there to everybody, the work that they're doing and touching so many lives, and that we can be a part of that, just excites me to no end. Because, like Sunday, we did the Christmas service. And as you know, it's unfortunate, but a lot of the churches, a lot of organizations and whatnot, they've been changing the Christmas carols so that they don't have Jesus or Christ in it.
Yeah, I know.
So although our chapel says that we basically are interdenominational and that we embrace interfaith, we also recognize that if you're going to celebrate Christmas, it's Christ's Mass, right? So we did a really good service and said, you know, there's many Christ lights. Jesus was a Christ light that we follow. And, you know, that's a pure light. He's like an elder brother. We're all part of that light.
Yeah.
And so we had this beautiful service. I'm telling you, afterwards, like we had the candles on and we did the caroling, and then each person that was assigned read part of the Christmas story. Well, we had people come up after service and say they hadn't been at a service like that in a long time. And they were so thrilled. Also, we have little luncheon or maybe just a little, sometimes it's cookies and coffee or whatever, but about once a month we usually have a luncheon after church. You know, where people are usually rushing to get home away from church, they're staying there until 2:30.
That's what makes a difference from having the hall to rent compared to having a church, because after church, you can sit, stand, and mingle with your friends after, and you can give everybody updates of new events that are happening in your life.
Exactly. The other thing, too, for people that are listening in from our chapel and listening in that are in the Vancouver, Surrey area, we are going to have a Christmas Eve service. It will be a short service, caroling and candle lighting. And I must pre-warn them, though, they're electric candles, because I don't want to have anybody set fire to somebody's hair.
We're not going
to
burn you, folks.
No, I don't want to burn it. I don't want to really light it up. But we will turn on the lights and we'll do some caroling. And then we're going to have kind of an open mic thing afterwards for entertainment. So anybody who has a little bit of talent can come and they can have a little bit of a feast and we can really celebrate the union of being together and being together in one mind. Yeah. So it's going to be good. So I'm really excited about how things have gone. As things have gone well for you too, haven't they, Derek?
It has, actually. It's helped me a whole lot. I've actually been busy this year, this season, working on the reservation in northern Alberta. Big shout out to all those who actually live up there. Work up with Drift Pile First Nations as well as the Sucker Creek First Nations and other territory areas. And a big shout out to all the people that actually help support me in my work. Did a lot of healing work up there as well as I actually had done. I was asked to come up there for the 2 days to work up in Fox Creek in Alberta. And I did not really a paranormal investigation, but actually a spirit investigation of a land that was homesteaded 150 years ago. And they wanted to see if I could make contact with the spirits on that land and see if there's any connection that there actually was a migration of people that actually had lived there in the past. And we found some pretty phenomenal stuff.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
To do that. I was in Calgary visiting my sister-in-law and my niece, who lived in Cochrane at the time, this is a number of years ago, asked me if I would come and take a look at this house that was in Cochrane.
Yeah.
Because they had kind of weird things going on, like hearing a rocking chair rocking, and they didn't even have one.
Oh, wow.
And it would sound like a rocking chair rocking in the bedroom upstairs, and it was a few odd things that were going on and different things. And the house wasn't that old. But what we did discover when we went in is that it wasn't coming from the house, but from the land. And it does come from the land because
it
had been a homestead, the site. And the woman that was there, and you could hear the rocking chair, was rocking her child who had diphtheria and was really stressed because her husband was away and there was a big storm and he couldn't get back or he was working away or whatever through the winter. And she was there alone while her child was dying with diphtheria. And wow. So this is what we were picking up that was coming. The emotion was so intense from when that experience on that land that it was being carried even through the new excavations. Unbelievable, eh?
Wow.
Yeah. We really find some strange things out there. And this is what I do like about the type of work we do because it really starts your mind working and realizing that God is really, you know, this humongous energy that's just all encumbrancing and always moving and always passing through and experiencing through everything. You know, it goes, it's around and in everything. And, you know, as you start getting into that understanding, you can quite understand that there can be experiences where you're crossing over into what is time zones for us.
But yeah, it is.
That are happening simultaneously in spirit.
I think awesome. I think the most amazing part for me, I mean, I'm sure it happened to you, Barb, as well. When I was actually working with them, and those of you who may not know, but when you work with First Nations people, they speak an old language, and the language I was speaking was actually Cree. And I was actually speaking the old ways, apparently.
The old dialect.
And when I was with them, actually, I had people that knew the language very well. I don't know Cree. I mean, I only know a couple words, but not like a whole complete sentence. And when I was actually taking on the connection with those spirits, and they were speaking through me in their language, and then I would tell them what they tell me, and then they would translate and tell me what it meant. And I thought maybe I was just saying, you know, words that didn't make any sense, but they said they knew exactly what I was talking about. And even though they replied, the few people that were living, the translators, they spoke back in Cree and said to me, ask them this. And so they were saying those words out loud. I was replying back in their language. And I was totally blown away. I don't know.
Well, because it's not your native tongue, is it?
It's not my native tongue. No, I didn't. I wanted to learn. I'd love to learn that language, but which they're trying to teach me now.
But, well, maybe you have a little bit of a genetic remembrance from that, though.
Yeah, well, it is part of my ancestry.
Because there is some Cree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is interesting, too, is that a lot of times, you know, just like you can have musical vibrations passed down. Like, for instance, if your grandfather was extremely musical, you could pick up a real rhythm. You know, you have just kind of in your genes, it's that rhythm's there.
Yeah.
And so there is a genetic remembrance that goes on as well. And so a lot of times experiences that people have can be genetic remembrances, and they're actually their cellular remembrance from, you know, passed on down from the generations. And there is some memory there. And that's rather interesting.
That makes a lot of sense because we have what you call a cell memory that carries with us genetically from generation to generation, past lives or family. And for some reason, it's still in us.
Yeah. And, you know, the traits, we know for a fact there's certain traits that are passed down from generation to generation. The one thing that's very interesting that I read a study on, and this is for your physical health, Derek, but I read a story on Native Americans, North Americans, and a lot of them developed diabetes. And they came to the conclusion that the reason being is that genetically they're predisposed in their pancreas and whatnot, and their system, their chemical system, to be runners.
Oh.
to be on the like to be on their feet, not riding in cars, not mm-hmm. you know sitting around. They ran. They used their legs. They were hunters. They went out. They ran from city to city, and you know we see them depicted a lot of times on horses. But a lot of times, mm-hmm. Native people didn't ride the horses from place to place. They ran on their feet, and they had, you know, their bodies were used to generating certain chemicals to give them the ability for that. Well, when they became in a situation where they became too stationary, they were sitting too much to eat. They're for to keep themselves alive, but the chemical imbalance there because yeah. they're not doing the exercise. And they have found with a lot of the North American and Native Indians that they basically have put them on a regiment where they have gone into like to running and mm-hmm. doing the things that the Native people would have done, say, 150 years ago, 200 years ago. And they have found that diabetes leaves the body. Like their body starts producing the proper chemicals mm-hmm. in that area. And it's really interesting. I have a friend who's both my friends are older. One has passed away and the wife is now in care. But she has a son who developed an edge of diabetes and the father had Native North American Indian. And what happened there is he started to develop it, and he read this article, I believe, as well. He didn't go running, but he went fast walking, and he would do 4 or 5 miles a day in walking. And he reversed the diabetes in his body, and he's fine.
That's great.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, you know, here's something else that I noticed. You ever had those dreams that you're speaking a different language, but yet when you wake up, you don't know what the language is about?
Well, I haven't, but I'll tell you one thing. Ozzy doesn't speak German, okay?
Yeah.
But he must have heard German through his grandmother when he was young.
Yes.
But he'd be sleeping, and about 3 times in our marriage, and I mean, we've been married for a long time, almost 58 years, but mm-hmm. 3 times I've woke up in the night, he's speaking with a guttural, you know, that type of language, and it wasn't English.
The German
so
accent.
It sounds German
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm thinking, now, is that genetic remembrance, or does he just remember his grandmother who passed away when he was about 3 years old? Does he remember her speaking to him? Or is that coming down the genes, eh?
And yeah, unless he's told you that he remembers her talking to him, he may not have replied back in German.
Well,
or didn't try
he
to
didn't
learn.
Know German. He was only 3, and he didn't speak German at all. His mother didn't speak German. His father was Irish, Canadian, and so they spoke English at home, right? They didn't speak German. Because the husband didn't understand it. And she was very thick speaking. She just struggled with English. Apparently didn't have a great use of the English language. They managed to work it out, whatever. But the kids all spoke English at home. They didn't speak German. Hmm. So, and Ozzy's mother wasn't German. So, therefore, she didn't speak German to him. And,
no.
But yet, he either had a memory of it, or it almost like it was like he'd spoken it as well. And so, you know, it makes you wonder if that's not the genes. So his grandmother and her ancestors would have been German.
Well, it does make sense because, I mean, myself, for example, I remember seeing myself talking to a couple of elders, you know, Native elders, First Nations elders in spirit, and I was talking to them in their language. As if it was a common conversation, like I knew all the words. I knew exactly how to reply. And they looked at me, and not stupidly or dumbfoundedly, they looked at me like, okay, then this is a common back and forth speaking Native tongue. And yet when I woke up and I thought, what the heck did I say? I remember being there talking to them, but what was it about? You know? And yet I knew exactly how to respond back in words.
That's
for some reason, I think we have what you call a part of our consciousness is so open back there because we're not looking for the thought of thinking. We just let it happen. You know, it's like, you know, you just speak. You're like my uncle Dennis used to give me a heck when I was a kid. He says, you don't think before you speak. You just say it. That's what gets you in trouble, he says.
In other words, speak without plugging your brain in first.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I don't care. I went ahead and did it anyways, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very interesting. Another thing, you know, like with Kenny there, it's quite nice that he's still writing and sharing all this kind of information, because I heard him interviewed on another program.
Yeah.
There's a podcast. Now, I can't tell you what the site is, but I just happened to go into it when I punched in his name. And they did a full interview like we would have wanted to do with him. And he was talking on there about his experiences of different places that he'd been and different people that he'd been involved with. And mm-hmm. It's so wonderful. Like, he and I both are older. So we came from a generation where a lot of this wasn't really accepted all that much. And you didn't hear, like, for instance, he talks about Marilyn Monroe and, you know, the different people that were interested in this. And,
yeah.
You know, that there was presidents of the United States, and there was he went over to England, and he was asked to come and do some stuff for the Duke and Duchess of Windsor.
Windsor, yeah.
Yeah.
He just gave me a list here of people that he actually read for. Lucille yeah. Ball, John yeah. Wayne, what's his name here? President Harry Truman, John F. Kennedy actually read
yeah.
for. He read
yeah.
Elvis Presley, the Presley family. He read for Debbie Reynolds. He read for Joanne Worley, Christine Jorgensen. Let's see. Gallery Camille, Anthony Newley, who passed away. He read for Rudy Valli. Rudy and him were actually quite close as friends, especially even his wife. In fact, those two, that's how they hooked up, was Kenny.
Yeah.
He read for Sally Struthers. One thing is I find is kind of funny. He actually used to be on Merv Griffin, and apparently he was on, I think he said 78 times on Merv Griffin. And
really?
Every time Merv Griffin would introduce him onto his show, he called him his psychotic.
His psychotic. His own
psychotic.
Personal psychotic.
His own personal psychotic.
Well, he must be somewhat like me, because people say, are you psychic? And I'll say, well, I'm physics psychotic or psychic or something that starts with a B.
Yeah. When he was 8 years old, you know who taught him how to read people? It was actually Mae West.
Yeah.
She actually was reading tarot cards.
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing is, though, you know, you hear that when Kenny is talking about it, or when he writes his book and whatnot. But really, it's only now in this generation that this is acceptable things to do. And now there's so many really good shows. I don't know if you've seen the new one that's out now. Why can't I think of the name of it? But the young man that's a doctor. And his ex-wife gets killed, and she comes back as a spirit to talk to, a gifted man.
Yes.
And it is just an absolute awesome program. Now, I would say probably 25, 30 years ago, you wouldn't dare put something like that on, because it would have been, you know, uproar coming up from everywhere about that. Even from the networks, they would have, no, we can't put that kind of stuff on.
Yeah,
but it's just amazing when you watch it now. But
yeah.
it's getting to be like everyday language. People understand it. They're not thinking it's all so weird. Mind you, you still have to be very cautious and very discerning on who you allow to come into your influence. Let's put it that way, because people will come in and they really are trying to dupe you in some way, and you can be not safe in the environment with some of these people. So you have to be discerning. But for the most part, you know, it's becoming quite knowledgeable that everybody has the ability to do all the things that you and I do every day.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I mean, in this field, I'm sure you noticed, Barb, there's a lot more people now today that are in the psychic field, a lot more people today that are in the mediumship field. But whether you separate the words or not, the fact is that there's a lot of people that are into it now more than ever before. I mean, when Kenny Kingston started this, I mean, this guy, he's 84 years old now, and he started off in this when he was a little boy. So, I mean, you think about all those years. It was considered as a, what you call a luxury to have someone with the skill, and there was a very limited amount of people that do this work.
Yeah.
Today, it's almost everybody wants to do what we do. But see, this is the thing, why we get into this kind of work was to actually help inspire others to learn about trusting their own intuition. That's why we're here. And it has nothing to do with about seeing who's better than the other. It's because we need to teach people how they can trust their own intuition, and that they can do this and use this in their daily life.
And certainly don't have to be dependent on going to psychics to make decisions for them.
Exactly.
Which is something that no psychic should be doing. No one should be making the decision for somebody else because, you know, first of all of us need help from time to time. And, you know, you have had times when the world's come up and kicked you, even though you have some, insight and you're a little bit more open and aware. You know, we still have things that come up and knock the skids from underneath us. And sometimes you'll need help and you'll go to your friends or you'll come to somebody for just even if nothing else, to just listen to you or verify or validate whatever you're getting yourself, right?
I even come over to your place and have a cup of tea.
We do, don't we? But on the other side, they don't need to be dependent on a psychic for an answer.
Not all the time, they can get
that, for most part, for themselves. And then, I don't know with you, but I find a lot of times when I'm doing readings that as I don't know the person and I say to them, well, I'm going to do the total reading through for you first, and then I'm going to ask you if you have any questions. And they say, great, and I do the reading. And when I get finished, I said, do you understand that? They said, oh, 100%. I just can't believe how accurate that is. Well, you know, the thing is that even at that, there might be 70% of what I said there they already know. But it validates them for making decisions and for knowing they're on the right path or knowing that maybe they need to make a change or whatever the thought is in their mind. You're validating that. You didn't know anything about it, and you come up with the information for them, you know. And that's what our job is, and if it helps them, and in particular when people lose somebody very dear, to be able to come to you and to be able to have you sit there and not know anything about them and say, you know, dear, there's this person here, and you describe them, and you say, you know, they're well and they're healthy in spirit, and they just want you to do the very best, honor them by being the best person that you can be. And you give them enough information that they can't doubt at all that who's coming through. And that is such a security for people to know that their loved one's still alive and still in spirit. And that they were alive before they got here. They've been alive in this walk, and they're going to be alive in there forever. And that they'll be, as they were, spirit, then spirit walking in a physical experience, and spirit again. So they'll all be together again in that spiritual realm. And it's so comforting to somebody who thinks it's the end. You know, that loved one's been taken from me. My heart's breaking. What am I going to do? You know?
I just finished doing a case of a young man that was murdered. And it became a big case up here where we are in Surrey, British Columbia, folks. Mm-hmm. And when I did this case, even though I spent the time with the parents at my home, and I said to them, you know, if you get me to the location where he was killed, I can probably give you a lot more information than what I am actually here at home. And they said, can you do that? And I said, yes. I said, I don't charge that at all. I go out there and I just tell you exactly what I see. We stood out there for 2 hours. And explaining to them how this young man had passed away, what the results were. Mm-hmm. This is basically what was for it, is to help the police. And let them know there's other, probably more things in there that would benefit them to use as a case to basically find who that person was that took that person's life. Mm-hmm. And so whatever I was able to share with that family, it even brought even more closure for them. That they're saying, definitely. You know what, I'm not sad anymore. And now I know that my son was not a bad person, that my son actually, what I put in there actually, that the son actually was helping the police, but they found out he was an informant, and that's why they had him killed. So, but the young boy wanted to be an officer. He wanted to be a police officer, but he didn't have the chance to because he was too young for it at the time. So,
you know, that's a really hard one, isn't it, Derek? Because when you think about it, we were talking about it a few weeks ago in church, and that sometimes that the spirit touches the earth just such a short period of time, and then we wonder why did they just touch the earth for maybe days, or maybe hours, or maybe 5 years, or maybe 20 years, you know, why? But, you know, they have a job to do, and their job is to bring that experience to the people that they touch. Yeah. And they have completed their job. So it's hard, you know, for the parents, though. Well, you know, my son will never be a police officer. He'll never get married, and I'll never have grandchildren from him and whatnot. He did his job, whatever that was. Yeah. And that's so hard for them. And if they, you know, then trying to say to them, you know, what your son wants you to do is just go on and be everything that you can be and use this experience to help other people.
I think what it was that once I was able to go to the location, and anybody can actually tell you this, if you go to any location to do the investigation and you brought closure there for them, it's going to help them a whole lot more, because the mother kept on saying she hardly could sleep. She was always keeping awake, waiting for her, you know, thinking that her son will just walk right through that door. And so when, I guess, you know, like I said, when you're involved in this kind of cases, or even, for example, if you lost a loved one through cancer, or another young woman mother I was talking to recently, her daughter did not pass away, but her daughter was in a major car accident, and she ended up in the hospital, and she survived the life-threatening accident. Mm-hmm. But now she's so psychologically afraid to get behind the wheel of her car because she got hit from the side, right? Mm-hmm. A guy hit on collision in the intersection, nailed her, and she actually had the green light, but the guy went through the red light and nailed her right from the side. So apparently her body went into shock. She has the shakes now. And yet, like, her father keeps on saying, I kept telling her dad, I said, your daughter keeps on wanting going to the passenger side, but she refuses to drive. I don't know why, unless it makes more sense, and it's because she's so scared thinking that she's going to get hurt again. Mm-hmm. The reason why she doesn't want to drive that small car anymore, because she feels helpless. I said, you're better off to do is get her a truck, and then she's not going to feel that feeling again, and it's going to give her back confidence back up again. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to sell his daughter's car because he already had the body work done again to fix it. But in the meantime, she still has the shakes. And I said, well, instead of getting her totally medicated all the time, get her to a chiropractor. Find out if there's actually any damage. Because did you get her there yet? Oh, no, no. I said, well, then get her to find out if there's x-ray, get your x-rays done and see if there's any damage to her body. If the hospital didn't do it, then find out. So it's funny.
You know,
it's
a really tough one because, you know, any time that there's an experience, and this sounds like a funny story, but to me it wasn't really funny. Yeah. But I went out to I was on a farm, like a little acreage, and we had five little calves, and we had to feed them. And I went out this one day, and I reached into the grain and put the grain into the one feeder for the first calf, reached in and put it into the second calf, and as I did that, a rat ran up the side of the wall.
Wow.
Right there, beside where my hand went in, you know, just went up the side of the. Well, I just about jumped out
That's
of my
creepy.
Skin because I don't even want, you know, give me a break. I think you have a right to life, but take your life a little bit further distance from mine.
Oh, rats.
So anyway, it scared me. And so then I fed the other three cows and I went back in. And every time, Derek, that I went into that barn to feed those cows. I'd feed the first one. I'd go to feed the second one. I'd hesitate. And I have to convince myself, don't be stupid. It won't be in the same place twice. You know, could be sitting on top of your head if it's in the barn. Why are you hesitating? And so then I would go and feed the other four, like four of them that we still had to feed. But it was really funny because I would hesitate at reaching that out to feed that second calf. And so, you know, this is how our brain works. Something like that happens, and immediately we think it could happen again.
Yeah.
You know, and so it takes some time for us to talk ourselves out of that. And it's kind of the same thing as if you've had a drowning experience. Every time you go near water, your first thought is, I could drown, you know. So it takes a lot of reprogramming and reworking with to be able to not have that problem.
It's actually interesting how we psychologically can make ourselves, I would call the will of doing things and moving things.
Uh-huh.
We can psychologically make ourselves feel that we can't do it or we can do it. You know, yeah. For example, you look at some people, they can, you know, unconsciously we can grab a weight and pick up twice the weight, and yet you could be 125 pounds and you can pick up 400 pounds. You don't know why you can't. For some reason, there's something in us that we can do these things. We can move these things. We can either make ourselves feel positive or we can make ourselves feel negative. And in the work that we do, folks, let you know that myself as a medium or as a psychic to read people's futures or read you as your family, same with Reverend Barber here, we're showing you that you can actually create an intention of your own self, that you can do this yourself. We have an intuition. Everyone carries that intuition side of it, we call that gut feeling. And for example, a lot of young women out there today, they always have that butterfly in their tummies because they're interested in the boy, or they have that feeling when they stand in front of someone, whether it's a good feeling or bad feeling. That's trusting your gut feeling. That's the intuition. And so we have to make a decision whether we like it or dislike it. And if we do believe in that, that's going to work for us, then we intentionally make it work. But if we don't think it's right, and yet someone's going to try and convince you to do it, and even though you think may not be right, and yet whether you fall for it, decide to go with what that person's telling you, even though you may think it's wrong, or you, like again, it may not be a bad thing, but learning the lesson, and that's basically what this life is all about, is learning the lesson, how we can trust our own gut feelings. Because I've had so many people ask me, do you really trust spirits? Do you really trust those spirits that work with you? And I said, entirely. Why? And they say, well, I'm not sure about that because I don't see them like you do. And I said, well, you know, you don't have to really see them. You have just to trust your own feelings. That's what's important. Those people in spirit, once in a while, they'll come to you and start talking to you in a dream or make their presence known by some means, but they're going to help you. But as long as we trust those feelings, they're going to come to you and help you out. But if you don't trust them, then who are you going to trust?
For sure. Do you know if there's anybody out there that would like to call in? 1-530-513-6472 is the line 2 for free toll-free call from here in Canada. And give us a call. And in the States, so it's 888-429-5471. So give us a call and talk to us out here. Derek, we're going to talk a little bit about our big conference that we're going to have.
Yes.
In the fall.
Yes.
Man, is that ever going to be something else? I'm so excited about that.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's celebrating my 60th, that's 60.
60 years a medium.
As a medium. Well, I guess you're medium from the day you're born, but
yeah, but you're medium,
actually
you're medium rare.
Actively aware of it for 60 years. And so we're going to have this conference. There's going to be people not, it's not just, say, what people would think is a rally, religious rally or whatever. This is going to be an awareness and networking conference.
Yes.
And it is going to be something that they haven't seen out here, I'll tell you. Because first of all, we're going to have a 3-day, well, it'll be actually a 2.5-day with on the Friday. They'll come in the morning and set up. Everybody will set up and we'll get ready. And then we're going to have kind of a social situation go on until after supper. And at 7 o'clock, you're going to host with me, co-host, a program called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, which the old sages from Tomorrow's Fortune, which was on CKVU in 1980, 81, and The Curious Mind, which ran for 5 years, 3 years in the 80s and 2 years in the 90s. We had a lot of people on there that were very gifted in their own field and very knowledgeable in their own field. Everybody from hypnotherapists to psychic healing. We had people doing all types of different things. We had even Dr. Chen we had on, who is a medical doctor who uses holistic medicine. We had people who did chiropractic. We had people from every walk of life that came on and had really wonderful experiences. But I'm going to bring on some really wonderful people. You're going to co-host with me, and we're going to have like a, just like a TV show live, right?
Yeah, we're going to go. Actually, we're going to be going live. We actually have another station that's going to be picking us up as well.
Yeah.
And, hopefully we can get BBS at the same time.
Well, we'll have to talk to them, let them know what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, but going
we're
live.
We're going to do a 3-hour program. So that's like you can come in and have 3 hours of entertainment. There'll be all kinds of wonderful people that are going to be on there.
Yeah.
And during the whole conference, we have, I believe, 15 different people who are going to be offering an insight into the type of work they do that will be uplifting. And Norma Cowie, for instance, is going to talk a little bit about the tarot, history of the tarot, and how tarot can help you in your life. Patricia Connor and Joy Ross are going to do Kindness is Key, and it's a program that they're going to be talking for a half hour, or three quarters of an hour, actually. Mm-hmm. 40 minutes, they will talk about what they're doing and have people participate with it. And then the 5 minutes of closing, thanking everybody and then telling them that they're going to be at a special table that is a network table for the people that are speaking. And then throughout the whole conference, they will have a table where they can people can go and talk to them and find out what it's, what their work is all about. But we're going to have just some fantastic people that are coming in for that. And so you, where are you going to go and be able to get 15 top-notch presenters that are going to present their work, and it's going to be interactive. You'll be able to ask questions. You'll be able to participate. Yeah. I'm going to do one that don't stand there sucking your thumb. How about that?
And, yeah, I've done that a few times.
I think everybody's done that. They get, like a kid, they get hurt, you know?
Oh,
and they're,
I think
they're
my thumbnail
hurt, and they
broke
internalize
down.
And they pull themselves inward, right?
Yeah.
And with children, when they suck their thumb, they will go inside themselves and they'll sob themselves to sleep, right? Well, mom is smart, dad is smart, because they usually say, well, come on, sweetie, I'll take you to the corner and buy you an ice cream, or come on, you just, you know, don't worry about those kids that are being mean or whatever, and they know how to distract them at something else. We'll go bake some cookies or whatever the case may be and get their distracted off of whatever's got them upset for the moment. So I thought adults need to do that as well.
Yeah.
When we get hurt, we internalize, we suck on the thumb, we suck all that pain inside, and we sob. And every time we think about that pain, we're sucking more of that pain back into ourselves, and our system thinks it's happening again. So when somebody's not been very kind to you and you internalize that pain, every time you think about that, it's like your system's taking it again.
I remember when I was a kid, this is years ago, my father used to say to me, I'll give you something to cry about.
He says,
if you want to cry, I'll give you something to cry about.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't quite think we'll do that. But
no,
you know,
we don't do that anymore, folks.
Yeah, but the key is that when we get really obsessed with the pain of all the bad things that are happening to us, our system thinks it's happening over again.
You know, I've noticed, if you notice, Barb, that there are actually a lot more people now today that are still dealing with that sucking your thumb thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and some people, you got there's either you're sucking your thumb or sucking on your pen or chewing on it, one or the other.
Yeah.
I don't see people actually use pencils much, but you're still using, you got something in your mouth that you have to think, whether it's that or a cigarette, one of the two.
Yeah.
And you know, reason why we do that, because it for some reason, whether we take it in ourselves, fear of change, or we don't know what to do with it. Again.
Well, sometimes it's like eating food or whatever, it's comfort.
Yeah, it is.
And so that's the physical aspect, but the emotional aspect of it is that if we only realize that if every time that we start saying, poor me, you know, that look what happened to me, it may have happened 40 years ago, you know, da-da-da, you know, my mom was mean and she was not a good mom, and they go through all of this instead of saying, okay, that was not something we can't change. And maybe the mom did the very best she knew how to do, even though that mom may not have done at all what you would do.
No.
But, you know, it also is an experience that you needed, as much as you might say, well, who would need that kind of, you know, mean-spirited person as a mother? Well, it teaches you a lot if you take from that and say, well, for one thing, I don't need to go be that kind of a person to experience it now.
We learn to break the chain away from that.
Yeah.
So. And that's what makes us even a little bit stronger. I mean, a lot of people, again, we can't blame the mom all forever. We can't blame mom the rest of our life. My mom this, my mom that. Yeah. You may be sharing the story of what did happen to you,
yeah.
But you can't blame your mother forever. You can't blame the person that you become that you make yourself the victim all your life. You can't do that.
Well, what I found too, Derek, and I mean, you and I have talked about this before. It's not only like people say, well, how can you forgive them? Well, you can forgive them. It doesn't mean you're going to condone the behavior.
No.
And this is where, I think this is where people get caught up. They think, if I forgive the person because they didn't know any better. I mean, Jesus said, forgive them. They don't know any better, right? They didn't know any better than
for
to
they
crucify
do not know
him,
what.
Right? Well, yeah. Same thing with us. That maybe they should have, could have, would have known better. But you know what? They didn't know better, or they would have done better. So whatever the experience was, first of all, we have to realize that we can't change it. So, you know, one of the things that I talk about is I talk about gardening. So if you have an old corn stalk in the field, you can't go at the old corn stalk and holler down there, you corn stalk, you didn't give me enough corn. It's empty. It doesn't have anything more to give.
Yeah.
Right? And so what's the sense of going back there? Or to go and kick it and say, you should have been broccoli. You know, it that doesn't really serve a purpose. Now if I go back and I take a look at what this emptiness is, and I realize that this is not what I needed, so I'm going to improve my own life, whether it was been done by somebody else to me or I did it to myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to hold that guilt. I don't want to hold that blame, because those are all negative energies, and negative draws negative energy to you.
Yes.
So what I want to do is use that as a tool and say, now, what did I learn from that experience? Now, the learning from that experience was, I'm not going to be that kind of mother. I'm going to be the kind of mother that the kids can count on, that they can come home and, you know, I'm going to be participating in the experience. Not judging the mother that didn't do it, because there may be a number of reasons in her background that brought her to where she is. And it may have been, and here's when I think it really pays off. When you can get to the point that somebody has done something to you that's been very mean-spirited and is really hurtful, if you can not only forgive them, but you can get to a point that you thank them for that experience, because that has made you be who you are today. And when you can actually say, you know, I actually feel sorry that that person had to go through that so that I had to learn that way. Because they missed out on all this good stuff that I have. they had to go through that terrible pain of being that mean-spirited person. When you get to that, I think you can forgive a lot of stuff, eh? And that's the Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
You know? We're talking this year has been really, I don't know how it is down in the States because I haven't really talked to too many people down there, but I find in our own area it's been very difficult this year for people financially. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the food bank and things like that that, you know, basically they're not getting enough food to supply everybody for this Christmas season coming up. The Salvation Army is not getting near the amount of people that they need to be getting, you know?
Yeah.
And
speaking of Christmas, what was your most fondest of Christmas story when you were a kid?
What was that?
What was your most fondest story as a kid for Christmas?
As a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, this one is going to kill you. I'll tell you two stories. One about a kid and about when I was adult and my kids were pretty much past that, you know, that bright-eyed, dazzled Santa Claus thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll tell you the first story. My mom and dad had decided that they were going to put on a really beautiful Christmas, and they always bought gifts for all my mother's brothers and sisters and their children that were living close together. Now, my mother comes from a very large family, so there were a lot of Christmas presents on the tree. Now, just prior to Christmas, my father taught me to read my name. And so I could read the name Barbara. So Christmas came, and I had bought a pipe for my dad for Christmas. And mom and dad were sleeping, and I got up and started opening up presents under the tree. Now, everything on the tree, of course, said either to Barbara or from Barbara, but I couldn't read to and from. I could just read Barbara. Uh-huh. So, unbelievably, I opened up excited about all these presents under the Christmas tree. I just ripped the paper off and, oh, lovely, and threw that off and then ripped the paper off on the next one. And the last present I opened, and it was the last present under the tree, was a pipe. And I thought, now how did this happen? I bought a pipe for my dad. And about that time, my mother was the first one to get up. And she came into the living room and screamed in horror. My God, what have you done? And I'd opened every Christmas present under the tree and ripped them paper from one end to the other. Oh, I think God. I was about 3.5 or 4, somewhere in there. Okay. I would have been either like 3 in October or 4 in October. I think probably 4.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, my mother was having a 10,000 conniption fits, and my father was saying, she's only a child, Mabel. Well, she shouldn't have done this. Well, she can't know the difference between to and from. Well, then you shouldn't have taught her to read her name.
You should have taught her to read her name.
So that was really, really funny. Now, the second story I'm going to tell you is about we have 5 children, and Christmas was wonderful, absolutely beautiful, just full of, you know, excitement and everything. And then eventually, because my children are just 9 years from the oldest to the youngest, they all got to an age where they weren't really old enough to have children of their own yet, but they were all past that really excited time, and they'd sleep in and stuff like this. So there wasn't really the excitement for Christmas this one year. So we had a store, and we had a New Westminster, and we were financially in pretty good shape. And we heard a radio broadcast that said that they needed some groceries to help make up the hampers because they were short groceries for the hampers. There hadn't been enough given in this church that was doing them in Vancouver was requesting if anybody could drop off some bags of potatoes or whatever that they could do. So anyway, Ozzy said, well, that sounds like a good thing. Let's load up our van. We had a big Fargo van. We loaded it up with all kinds of goodies, potatoes and vegetables and canned goods and dry goods and sugar and chocolate bars and anything we could think of. And we took this truckload of food down to a place in Vancouver. Well, as it so happened, when we pulled in, being very excited about donating these things, they said, oh, you have a van. Maybe you would like to turn around and help us here because we haven't got enough delivery people. Okay, we thought, this is really great. We'll go on the deliveries. Well, we get to the first house, Derek, and it's one of these Victorian homes, you know, where you have three stories, and you come in and go up one flight of stairs, and then the second flight of stairs goes up to like two-room attic rooms. And there's a young girl up there who has a couple of babies, and she's expecting another one. And they're hugging on her legs, and she's crying. And she's saying, oh, my goodness, I have never seen that many groceries all at one time. Now, we're carrying two boxes. You know, they'd be about like maybe apple boxes, you know, or banana boxes or whatever, full of groceries. And there's a turkey and stuff like that. A very beautiful gift and everything. But not to have seen two boxes of groceries at one time. I mean, I'm just taken back by this. Well, we get up there and we give them to her and we give her a hug. And she's just so thankful for the gift. So we thanked her, blessed her, and away we went. Well, the next place, we go a number of places, and the next place that's memorable is a gentleman who had served in the Second World War. Now, he was falling on some pretty hard times, didn't have a lot of pension money. Somebody had turned his name in. So when we knocked on the door and said, oh, this is Christmas cheer, and he said, I don't want any charity. And I said, oh, sir, please let us help you. You gave up all those years of your life to help us so we can have Christmas and have peace in our country. Said, please let us help. So anyway, he allowed us to come in. And we were quite, you know, moved by this gentleman who was actually so proud, but yet needed this so badly. So we went on our way and we delivered a number more. And then we went into a complex that was low-income complex. And practically everybody in that complex got a hamper. And the last hamper that we had on was for a woman at the very end of the complex. And we'll say that it was number 48. And they weren't home. So I went to number 47, which was right next door. It was kind of like in a horseshoe complex. Knocked on the door and I asked this young girl, I said, could we leave these hampers for your neighbor because we are not going to be able to get back with them and she's not in. Oh, most certainly, she says. So she lets us in and we start, and she said, just place them underneath the table there. So we put them there and of course there's these two big boxes. They've got cookies and they've got butter and they've got turkey and all these things you can see right on the top. Goodness knows what's underneath them. But anyway, we place them underneath and our kitties come running out of the living room. Oh, mommy, oh, mommy. And they're clapping their hands and their mom said, wait a minute now. This isn't ours. It belongs to the neighbor next door. Oh, they look pretty disappointed, right? Well, we thanked her very much and we get outside and it's Ozzy and I look at each other, and I said to him, I think that young woman's worse off than the people we've been delivering to. Well, he said, so do I. He said, but it's a shame that there wasn't, you know, a hamper for her. I said, well, I got a good idea. Let's go back now. This is our last delivery. And we'll go back to the church that we got them from. We'll tell them we've got the deliveries finished. And then we'll tell them that we're going to go back to New Westminster, where we lived. mm-hmm. from Vancouver. And we're going to pack up a hamper for this girl out of our own grocery store. So he said, yeah, that's a good idea. So we get back there. Now, can you believe the goddessence in this?
Yeah.
Somebody said, who delivered to Complex at da 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 da? And we said, we did. And they said, well, there was a hamper that was missed. It was pushed over to the side, and it was with someone else, and they took it out, and it's the wrong complex. So do you think you could go back with the hamper? Well, we said, you bet we can go back with the hamper. So on the way back, I said to Ozzie, I don't think that young girl would even move one thing in that thing. And he said, well, why not? I said, well, you know, it'd be very tempting to give at least one box of cookies to your kid, wouldn't it? You know, mm-hmm. it got this whole two box full of stuff. And, you know, my kids haven't got anything. Maybe one box of cookies won't be missed. I said, so the temptation might be there. And I said, I don't think she'll do it, though. I don't think she'll touch a thing in there. So anyway, we get there and knock on the door, and this girl opens it, and we said, Christmas cheer for you this time, sweetheart. And she went, oh, my God. And she starts to cry and sits down in the chair. And here were the groceries underneath. Not one thing moved. The pound of butter sitting on the top was exactly where it was. The turkey was exactly where it had been placed. Not a thing moved. And she said, oh, you cannot believe how glad I am to see you. She said, you know, I looked at that and I didn't even want to look through to see what they got because I was so afraid I might take a box of cookies. And if I did, how could I tell my children it's okay to steal when you're hungry?
Yeah.
She said, but we really don't have any Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. Now, can you imagine? That was the best Christmas that Ozzie and I ever had.
Yeah.
You know, there was lots of times we had, you know, the children and we struggled, you know, to make ends meet. Other times we had the children and we had lots of money to buy them, whatever we chose to buy them.
Yeah.
And here we were having the absolute best Christmas by going around and witnessing the generosity, all these people that had sent stuff in to this church to pack, and all the people that were packing, all the people that were working there and, you know, giving their time and energy and money to see that that the people that were without didn't go hungry for Christmas. And, you know, one of the programs that we're going to have on this conference is Kindness is Key. And this is a program that Patricia Connor and Joy Ross run. And their premise is be kind to yourself, but be kind to other people. Always be kind. Be kind year-round. Don't just be kind at Christmas or when it's expected of you or when the collection plate is passed and somebody's watching you, you're going to be generous at that time. Just be generous in your heart all year round with your kindness. Be kind to everybody. And, you know, Ted Koons wrote that book, Peace Begins With Me. He's another one that's going to be at the conference. Mm-hmm. And he really says that when you think the world's falling apart, you've got to get back to yourself and realize that the peace that you need, what you're looking for, is within yourself. It starts with you. And then everybody that you touch, that peace just goes like a ripple in the pool, in the pond, right? And throw a little drop of peace in the water and it just goes out to the whole world, to the whole universe. So, you know, I'm really excited about these programs that are going to go on there. We've got people that are going to be health organ, you know, they help you to take good care of your health. It's just going to be such great speakers that are going to get in there, and we're going to have like 2.5 days of just everything just going great.
Your puppy barked.
Now, the good part about it, too, is the whole weekend you're fed.
You're going to have
fabulous food.
Lots of food.
lots of food.
Another good thing too we're going to do is I made an invite to Kenny Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
Remember him a couple of, like I said before, the last time we spoke to him was about 3 years ago on our program. And I asked him if he would be interested in coming down to the church, if he would be interested in come from California, come visit us. He said that he would be honored to come and see the church when we get it. Well, now the church is there, and I made an invite and asked him if he would like to come to the conference mm-hmm. as well. And he's seriously considering it.
Well, that would be good. We have the Reeses are coming over. That's the second night that we're going to do that one conference, that one stage show, right? That's going to be just fantastic because people are going to be able to have messages. They're going to be able to participate. They're going to be able to ask questions of the mediums that are on there and the different people that are on there. And then on the Saturday, all day Saturday, we're going to have these marvelous speakers back to back. There'll be 3/4 of an hour, then the next speaker will be on, and then there'll be a break, and you'll be able to go around and talk to people and have a snack. And then we'll do another back to back one, like an hour and a half, and then do the same thing, like 3/4 of an hour, 3/4 of an hour. And we'll do it back to back, and then have these breaks and the full dinners and full lunches and everything. They're going to be on. And then the Reeses, for anybody that don't know them, you can go on to Accolade, Mediumistic, Accolade Academy for Mediumistic and Psychic Studies. And they are absolutely going gung-ho. You know, they're all over the Europe now. They don't only just do their work in Wales and in England and in Scotland, but they're going into a lot of the other parts of Europe. They come over there on the East Coast and the West Coast, alternatively, of the United States, and doing tremendous work down there at teaching people that basically what we do, just keep it simple. And they go and do workshops, and people just come out of there just fired up. And they're going to be doing a workshop, kind of a little bit of a presentation for about maybe 3/4 of an hour, and then they're going to do demonstrations for the remaining of the 3 hours. So we got two big stage shows, and then on Sunday we're going to have another group of people that are coming in, and we have every walk of life that people that you can think of that are from positive affirmations to, and we're not going to do psychic readings. This is not a fair. It's a networking. So that if you, I was talking to Allie, right?
Yeah.
And when we were on the last time, and Allie is coming from New York, right? And she's really interested in coming up for the conference.
Cool.
Yeah. So there's people from all over the states that are going to be coming as well, so that will be really good. But just kind of give a little bit of a rundown of what we've got. We have we have Norma Cowie, and we have Ted Coombs, who is a master of education and a psychologist, a clinical psychologist. We have Richard T. Clark, who is another psychologist that deals with inner fitness. That's his program. Rosemary Phillips. Have you seen Rosemary work?
Yes. Yeah. She's really with
she does music with
the guitar and does readings at the same
time. Yes. And she not only does she write her own music and have some really fabulous CDs, but she does a lot of John Denver and a lot of Elvis Presley. And she works that in and does mediumship between songs. And just absolutely an awesome girl to be working with. Jeannie Martin, you remember Jeannie.
Reverend Jeannie Martin. She's also, Jeannie Martin also does past lives.
And she has a, and she has a program on BBS.
Yeah.
On Sunday, alternate Sundays, I think. So she's going to be on as well. And the Janet and Ray Helms. Now, they do a really interesting thing.
Dr. Love.
Have you seen their work?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You know, I have had young people that really have a lot of things to share, but they're so petrified of getting up in front of public and sharing that stuff that they were just frozen. And one gal that's working with us now, she has just gone gung-ho in the last year and a half. And we haven't been in there quite 2 years. When we first went in there, so help me, this girl could not step up that one step onto the rostrum without her knees shaking. Even when we were just in there cleaning up, we said, well, stand up there and see how it feels. Yeah. And she would just go into cold sweats. Now that girl is chairing, she's speaking, she's teaching. I cannot believe the work that these people do.
Well, don't forget, he's also a private. He's also a private investigator.
Private investigator as well, which is kind of neat.
He had to investigate her first and find out how she's going to be strong.
And of course, the Reeses are going to be doing kicking it up a notch, which is good. We have Pat Antonik, and she's a registered nurse. But you should hear what she does. It's just absolutely fantastic what this woman is involved in. She has a program that she kind of coined, psychoneuroendoimmunology. I can almost not say it. It's the mind and body connection and how the mind and the body have to be healthy together, you know. And she's worked 30 years specializing in mental health care and has decided to retire from being in the hospitals and has her own center where she's called Natural Comfort Wellness Center. And she's going to come and talk to us about, you know, being able to do that. And so that's absolutely fantastic. And of course, you're going to be there, Derek.
Yep. I'll be there.
And you're going to be there. And
in my twinkle toes.
We're going to show off your talents and
I will be bringing also two folks. I'm also an author. So I'm going to bring my books with me too. So
good.
If anybody wants to get a book from me, I'll have those available as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually am working on my second book, and I'm hoping it'll be ready for September.
Yeah, this is what the networking thing will be. Is that basically like Ted Koons has a really good book. Yeah. I have two books. I don't know whether my third one will be ready by then. The third one is a novel. It's not. It has psychic stuff in it, but it actually is fiction, right? And
guess what, folks? I heard she read to me some of the stuff. Oh my God!
Yeah. So I'm hoping to have that ready by then. And what we're putting together right now is a magazine that's going to have everybody in it. And we'll have some ads in it. And we're going to send it across Canada and across the States. And hopefully going to have some interesting articles in it as well. And nice. I've got one article in there. It's called The Ghost in the Kitchen. And it's a true story.
Oh,
yes. And I'm not telling you the story because you're going to have to wait for the magazine. It'll be free. And we're going to send it out.
Honey, there's a ghost in my kitchen. Well, get your husband out of there.
Oh, I'm telling you, it was absolutely petrifying. it's riveting to read it. Yeah. You know, you go, oh my goodness. It was just absolutely unbelievable. And so we're having some of the people write articles, which will be on the pages where we have some ads. Like, for instance, if I wanted to put an ad in there about my classes or whatever, then beside that there will be an article. There will be two ads on one on one side of the page and one on the other page, and then the article will run it for two pages in between the articles or between the ads. Eh?
Yeah.
And so be careful what you ask for is what Rosemary Phillips has written. So we're going to have a lot of really interesting things there. So the magazine, I'm hoping to have it out. I was hoping to have it out in January, but it looks like it'll be the beginning of February, maybe for the anniversary of the chapel for the new location. And it has write-ups about all the different people that are going to be in the conference, right?
You know, when Rosemary Phillips is telling you a story about, she's writing a book called Be Careful What You Ask For, I actually, when I used to run a sweat lodge, and I used to tell the people, be careful what you ask for when you're in the lodge, because it's like going to church. And, you know, when you pray for something, you ask for something, it's be careful what you ask for, because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We had a little 12-year-old boy come in the lodge, and after the lodge is all done, he comes outside, and he walks up to me after, and he says, you know, I'm not going to come back to the sweat lodge anymore. I said, well, why? He says, I asked for $1 million and never got it.
Yes.
That tells you where that little boy's head is. He wants $1 million and that's it.
Unfortunately, you know, that little boy isn't alone, because there's a lot of people that have the idea that, you know, that they can just concentrate on something and it'll happen. Well, there's a thing called the power of intention. And yes, the intention is the energy follows the target that it's going to. So wherever that energy is intended to go, that's where it'll go. So thoughts are energy, and they will follow the source, down from the source to wherever the intention is. However, what we have to be careful of is that when we follow one universal law, which is the law of attraction, or cause and effect, whichever you want to look at, we also have to be careful that we don't break any other law, because it can snap back like an elastic and give you a zinger.
Yes.
Okay, so in a lot of cases, people get caught up in one thing, like the law of attraction. So I can just concentrate on getting $1 million and I'm going to get it, or winning a lottery and I'm going to get it. The thing is that I could concentrate on the corn seed all I want. It isn't going to become broccoli. Is it? I could pray over it. I could want it to be broccoli, and it won't be. So there has to be, the law of harvest has to come in there. And so therefore you have to look at what's put in the ground is going to come back out of the ground. So what you put in, not just what you intend it to be. I might intend to have a great crop, but if I sit under the shade tree and do nothing, then it's not going to come in, right?
No, except the broccoli may turn yellow if it lets it too long. Look like corn.
An interesting thing, too, is that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, that doesn't apply when, you know, the time, energy, and money thing doesn't apply when it comes to lottery. I say, well, yeah, it does. Because, first of all, you've got to take the time to go down to the lottery booth. You've got to take the energy to get the thought running to what numbers, you know, you have to pick the numbers, and you have to invest the money. So it is time, energy, and money, isn't it?
Yes.
Because thoughts are in energy. So you have to do all of those things before you're going to get a reward. So when you put corn in the ground, if you don't water it, you don't take the weeds away from it, the negative things away from it, and you allow the environment to destroy that crop that you've got in there, all the praying over it in the world isn't going to make it change. So you have to remember there's a whole bunch of universal laws that we're dealing with out there, not just one, right?
You know, this is interesting as well. People talk about, and I've been hearing this quite often this recent last little while, people have been actually talking about the shifting of the Earth and what's going to happen in the year 2000, because you're talking about December 21st, and, you know, I mean, December 21st is like, what, just a couple more days. And they're saying it's supposed to be, you know, the big, huge end of the world in 2 days. I don't think so, folks.
Well, mostly it was predicted right around the time we're going to have the conference, actually, for September of 2012. But I'll tell you something to take a look at. You take a look at Uranus and some of the planets that went on back between 1926 in 1929. And you're going to find that Uranus is coming into the same position now. And what happened at that time was we worked up to a crash of the world economy.
Yeah.
And so I think the shift is going to be more an economic shift, that we're going to have to revamp and shake up our thinking, because look at how many, what exactly has been happening now is that we've had how many bankrupted countries. Mm-hmm. And how many countries are in unrest right now because they can't feed their people.
And yet, that's, I mean, again, that's a physicality.
That's a major shift.
Yeah, it's a shift, but as far as a family life, job type of situation, but it's not about the world coming to an end.
I don't think it's the world coming to the end. No. I think the thing is that what's going to come to the end, and if you think about it, think back on the Roaring Twenties, okay, which came ahead of the crash. And what was it? Oh, that they had no conscience about spending money. They just went out and partied, you know, and they spent, and danced the night away.
Yeah.
So what are we walking in now? And is that correction going to be nature's way of correcting the imbalance that we have? So I don't think it's a negative thing as much as it's going to be a positive shift.
Yeah.
And I may be wrong.
I don't think we in Canada really are suffering as much as, I mean, I'm not going to use the word suffer. I don't think a lot of us in Canada here are not going through such a really bad situation compared to the U.S. They're having it harder than we are.
Well, you know, here's another thing to think about, Derek, though. Yeah. And, I mean, you've been in this position, and I've been in this position.
Oh, big time.
A lot of people who are listening out here have been in this position.
Yeah.
Everybody's got lots of money, but we're in a position at that time in our life when we're in depression financially. That we're in just as much depression as being back in the 1929.
And I wonder if it's close to that.
Economic household crashes, right? Yep. And everybody around you's got money and doing things, and you're in the middle of a depression. So, you know, we go through phases of that anyway. So the thing is, what happened in the Roaring Twenties is it had quite a generation after the First World War that was out there having a good time, Charlie. Everybody's having a good time. The personal responsibility just wasn't there. Everybody's just kind of kicking up their heels.
Yeah.
And so they had a number of young people that couldn't look after themselves. And fortunately enough, not a whole bunch. We have a longer time now that has been kicking up our heels and lots of things coming in and things flowing and lots of money around and whatnot. Although there's still been some people, which there are today, there's still people out there that are hungry, and they have their own individual depression.
Definitely.
You know, they're starving out there. But the individual people as a whole, like the society as a whole, they're spend, give the kids everything, give them toys instead of time. The bottom's got to fly. The balance, you know, the balance has to be there because nature just doesn't. It just abhors imbalance, and it will correct it. So I would be putting my reputation right on the line to say that it's not the end of the world; it's the end of our economic, you know, good days.
So is that what you would see in astrology, Barb? Is that our
that's
economic?
That's what I see. Yeah, I don't know other astrologers that would agree with me, but I certainly see that because I thought, well, I'm going back to see what happened in the crash, you know, when it crashed, because I had a feeling that Uranus, who is the planet of change, has something to do with this. So I thought, where was Uranus, you know, this?
So what do you feel like before the year is finished on the 31st to January 1st, what do you think that was going to happen for most people here in Canada, and probably in the U.S.?
Well, you know, the thing is that it's just the same thing as when somebody gives you kind of an insight on something, right?
Yeah.
If, for instance, you come to me for a reading, and I say to you, hey, Derek, you know, there's a possibility of this, this, and this being on your pathway, which could cause you an economic disaster in your household. And it, so I would be very cautious in the next few months and hold on, you know, to just tighten the belt down a little bit. Then you could avoid that. And we could avoid it if we all tighten down a little. But we have to take a look at how much deficit is our country in. And we're not the only ones. I mean, we're loaning money to other countries to get them out of their debt. And we're borrowing money from somebody else to get to be able to give money to these countries to get them out of their debt. And yeah. Eventually, this has got to end because they're borrowing off of Peter to pay Paul. So if, in actual fact, it changes our economic structure, you know, that then it might be a good thing in the end, because Uranus is always just takes care of something that hasn't been looked after and just gives them a kick in the butt. And then after everything settles down, things are usually better as Pluto comes in and cleans up the mess.
I got a question for you, because I'm sure everybody, people will be asking questions. This is my curiosity. What would be a tarot card? What's the difference between a tarot card and a reading from a teacup? What would be the difference, or is that pretty well the same?
Well, you know, here's my read on it. It's a language, okay? Just like you don't speak the Cree language as such, but if you start learning it, then you have an ability to speak it, and then you understand something. So if you are learning the language of the tea leaves, in other words, the symbolic meaning that the leaves show, then to you, a cat may mean one thing and it might mean something else to me, but the language is to the reader. So whatever that means to you is what it is. Whatever that tarot card means to you, that will be what will turn up when that particular message needs to be given. So it won't really matter whether you have tea leaves or tarot card or just doing straight clairvoyance. You will get the same. You will get something that will be a symbolic language that will be for you.
That's good. I've been asked that question by a lot of people. And I just wanted to share it with you.
You know, a friend of mine developed these modern-day symbol cards.
Yeah.
And we have had one of our people at the church donate some money to try. We want to try to get them marketed, right? So we need to get them printed and so on. But they're just a modern-day card, and you might see a tightrope. Well, if I said to you, Derek, what would it mean if you seen a tightrope? What would that mean to you as language? If you seen, picked up a card and it said a tightrope, and I'm the person sitting from you, what would you tell me?
I'm on the edge of my rope.
Yeah, you're in a precarious position, a worrisome position. But what do you also know about a tightrope? There's a safe place and there's a safe place. And how do you walk? It's safe enough on the rope. So how do you walk from one safe place to the other safe place, even though it's precarious?
It's called focus.
Yeah, you keep your eye on the goal ahead. You don't look down. You take one step at a time, and you don't do anything foolish until you get to the safety zone. Right? Yes. Or get to your goal. So it would be a projection then that the person is going through something that's a little bit, you know, nervous. They're a little bit nervous about stepping outside their comfort zone, because that one stand that they're on is a comfort zone. And to get to where they want to be, to get to their goal, they have to come out of that comfort zone and step on the tightrope one step at a time. So when they get on that tightrope, don't fear. Keep your eyes straight on your goal. Go across there and don't be anything foolish. Don't start doing fancy dance out there. And don't get fearful running back and saying, I can't do it. Just keep your eyes straight and don't look down, right? Don't keep your focus on where it is across the other safety zone. When you step over there, you've got through the nervous part of it. You've acquired your goal, and there you are. So that would tell you a lot. The simple card with a tightrope would tell you a lot about what's going on with that person. If that turned up in their financial house, then you would say it's in outer world business, finances, or career. So they may be trying to step out in a financial way that's a little scary for them, right?
Yeah.
So the symbolic meaning to the person who's doing the reading, But the reading is for the person that you're doing the reading for. Not, so it's not up to you to know what that information is. It's just up to you to tell them what you see. So now if you and I both read the same thing, same instrument of mediumship, it doesn't matter that you read it differently than I do.
Yep.
When you're reading it, you're supposed to read it, and I'm not supposed to sit there trying to say, oh, I wouldn't have read it that way, or I wouldn't have read it that way, because the message is to you. But the message is for me, so it's not up to you to tell me what you think that is. Just tell me what you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way I teach people to realize the reading, the language is to the reader in whatever language they set up. And I don't speak French, but a French-speaking person might talk French. So somebody might talk in the language of symbols, somebody might talk in the language of cards, somebody might talk in the language of throwing five pennies down and how many times, how many heads up and how many tails showing up might give them an answer to something. You know, Dale, our friend, she uses license plates, numbers, and that gives her an insight. You know what I mean? But that's her language. That's the language she set up.
It's part of the numerology, she calls it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had a situation with license plate number myself, and it was kind of cool. But we're almost coming to a close.
What was that?
So we're almost coming to a close.
Yes, we are. Yeah. And so we better thank BBS Radio and all those people that have been listening in and all those people that supported us over this wonderful 5 years. We don't get on the air that often, but we'll be back. And thank you, Derek.
You're more welcome.
And have a great Christmas, guys, down there.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, everybody out there. And Merry Christmas. I want to say Merry Christmas to you guys, not just happy holidays. No. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. With C-H, not Xmas. Okay. So have a great time, guys.
Happy New Year, folks.
Happy Hanukkah to our friends coming up tomorrow.